Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ken Hudman Show. Ken has investigated the strange and unusual for over two decades. He's led ghost tours, and he's accessed the most haunted places in the Southwest. He's the author of some 40 books of the paranormal, unusual, hidden treasure, conspiracies, and the downright strange. His personal experiences and the experiences of many others are related on this show and in his many books. Please sit back, relax, and enjoy as Ken takes us into tales of terror, trauma, and triumph. And now, your host, Mr. Ken.
And good evening. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show right here on the one and only Blog Talk Radio, coming to you live from our studios in El Paso, Texas, gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Now, we've had a lot of people on the show talking about ghosts and what have you, and a lot of self-professed experts run around this town trying to make you believe that if there's something to be known about ghosts, they know it. Frankly, one of them is so confused he thinks he's me. But the man I'm going to have on right now, Mr. Robbie Thomas, has written a book called Paranormal Encounters. And in this book, it's a behind-the-scenes look at legitimate paranormal investigations and a discussion of two major movies. So I think you'll enjoy hearing what Mr. Robbie Thomas has to say. That being said, do let me remind you this hour is brought to you by Marcello's Ristorante Italiano. Two locations. First one at 1360 Lee Trevino in the Sun Point Shopping Center. The second at 5380 North Mason, the Festival Crossing Shopping Center. Both a slice of old Italy set down in the desert southwest. And in addition to the pasta and the chicken and the veal and all the other Italian food they have, they also have steaks, and they are excellent steaks. You go in and tell them you heard about it on the Ken Hudnall Show. I'll appreciate it. Additionally, this Saturday and Sunday at the Wyndham Hotel is EPCON, El Paso's version of Comic-Con. I'll be there. Not only will I have a display of my books, but I'll be giving away gift coupons to the various restaurants I advertise. So you come on out, you come by the table, buy all the books you can carry, that'll make me happy, and sign up for the drawing I'll be having to give you away $25 gift coupons. Anything I can do to make my listeners happy. Okay, having said all that, and one more thing. Thursday night, September 9th, from 6 to 9 p.m., Emma Blue is going to have a cocktail party. And they're going to have a lot of horse d'oeuvres. For those of you that grew up where I did, that's how you pronounce it here. You say hors d'oeuvres. 5410 North Mesa, right across from Charlotte's. And I think you will enjoy that. I won't be there because I'll be on the air. I don't know why they schedule things during the time I'm on the air, but they do. Now I'm going to bring on the one, the only, Robbie Thomas. And how are you?
I am hungry after you just said all about that steak. And
hey, the food is excellent. My wife convinced me to go over, you know, take her out to dinner at one of my advertisers, and it was very good.
Well, you've got me curious. It sounded good.
Hey, come on to El Paso.
Oh, you know, love to come down there, and you know I will sometime.
Well, by all means, we'll take you out to dinner.
That'd be nice.
At one of my advertisers. Okay. Now, you've written quite an interesting book called Paranormal Encounters. Now, why don't you tell us about it?
Paranormal Encounters, it all started back when we did Dead Whisper, the movie. I came off the Natalie Holloway case with 14-time award-winning film producer Ronald James, Donald Newsom, Doug Newsom, Dr. Fred Bell, and the liaison for the family who was fronting $1 million. But we weren't going to take the money. I want to make that clear. The money was actually going to go back to the mom and for missing exploited children. So as we got told not to come there because everybody and their grandmother was combing the island and their economy was just getting crushed, we stayed behind. Now, Ron turns to me and says, what do you want to do next? And I said, well, let's go film Ghosts and Legends. So he says, okay, well, where do you want to go? And I said, you pick the three spots or four or five or whatever and, you know, keep them unannounced to me and let's do it. So he picked the Chicago area. And we formulated a group of people like Michael Esposito, EVP specialist, the Indiana Ghost Trackers. A few other people stopped in. There's a notable criminal detective, Dave Edwards. He stopped in and became part of this as well. So we did the filming. And after the film of that one, and then after doing the Sally House in 07, I look back at everything I've done. And I decided to put everything into a culmination and put it into a combining book of stories of real field investigations with integral individuals who had their say on how they felt behind the scenes of movies and also that of paranormal investigations. And then you get my take on it. It all stemmed from, you know, wanting to relate for everyone what's been going on in the field work for so long so that they can turn and look at the book, read it, and say, I understand what's going on, and, you know, I've been through this, and I like what's going on and what I do. So it's to further the education and help of everyone.
You know, it's interesting. When I started dealing with the paranormal here in El Paso, which is, you know, the framework I have to judge things by, I was pretty much it. People laughed at me. And then when it became kind of the thing, suddenly you can't move in this town for tripping over ghost hunters. To the point, one of them decided the way to get ahead was to pretend to be me, and that would get people in, he thought, because I started doing a radio show, and people laughed at me, you know, who's going to listen to a show about, you know, ghost hunting and all that? The largest listening audience that station had. And every one of them was the most brilliant expert that anyone had ever seen on ghosts and ghost hunting.
Right.
My humble opinion, all of us are just learning.
Oh, absolutely.
And but you try to tell some of these folks, and they'll tell you they're crazy. Now, ask them, well, what are their credentials? Most of them just started doing it. But, you know, advertising being what it is, of course, they have to put themselves out there. And, of course, none of them will admit there's something they don't know. And it kind of clouds the issue for those few that seem to, you know, have a good grasp of what's going on.
You know, over the years, you know, notice this. You're aware of Keith Age, and, you know, a lot of people do know Keith.
Mm-hmm.
It would be about 10 years ago. He seen me on a TV show. He was up here in Canada, and he was doing a program, I think it was called Creepy Canada. I'm trying to remember. And I'm in my hotel room. I'm in Ottawa. And I don't know how he got my phone number, where it was, but I get the phone call. And sure enough, you know, it's Keith Age on the phone, and he's talking to me. He's seen, just seen me on TV down in Ottawa. And it was amazing. You know, because like you said, go back then, you know, and in Canada itself, like you, on your right hand, you can count how many people there were in the paranormal back then.
Yep.
And now it's everybody, you know, sees a ghost team on TV or something, and they all run out and get these matching shirts and outfits, and, you know, they look like a hockey team, and they're running around.
Yeah, you're right about that.
You know, and
different expression I use, but hockey team is good.
Hockey team is good. But, you know, it's amazing. And, you know, when they come out and they say, well, we've got 15 years experience, and, you know, or 20. And you say, well, you know, have you got any documentation? Do you have anything? And they can't back it up. And it's just amazing.
And none of them admit that they might not know what the hell they're talking about.
And that's true, too.
Which, you know, can give the field, such as it is, a bad name.
We have had black guys in this field long enough, and, you know, it's hard to distinguish the common folk. You know, I'm going to take this outside of the paranormal investigations for a moment. I'm going to take just for a brief second to doing murder cases.
Mm-hmm.
I get called by the U.S. Marshals. I get called by, you know, different law enforcement, and, you know, I name the names of the individuals who are the law enforcement agents, and I sit with families, and they don't know where to turn, and because, you know, they've been bushwhacked by, you know, certain people who say they claim that they can help them in certain areas, and they can't. So now they're not only hurt from their pocketbook, but they're hurt emotionally, and it's very disdaining when it looks upon people like myself who work with police in that genre, in that area. Same thing with paranormal investigations in the paranormal field. You know, it's very disheartening to hear about people walking into places saying, you got a demon in your home, and then when it's really actually the motor in the refrigerator humming.
Yeah, I go along with that.
So, you know, you look at something like that, and it just puts a black eye on the community. And then you have people who are so much drama queens, and, you know, I call it like it is. And there's a lot of drama queens in the paranormal. If it isn't right for them at that particular moment, then it's not right at all. And so then you get this click, and everybody seems to format or, you know, manifest this great big ongoing thing, and they become drama queens. I kind of, you know, I'm going to say this in a very polite, in an individual way of my own work. I kind of take myself outside of that realm, but I work in it. But, again, I take myself outside of it because I want to help individuals, which I've done, and do the police work, you know, and as you write books, I write books, movie scripts, been in movies, and such things as that. So I don't want to do the play game stuff. You know, that is so beyond what this whole scope of trying to learn the truth and seek the truth is what it's about.
Well, I agree. I mean, I've watched people say, well, everything we do is based in real science. And then 5 minutes later, one of them is channeling the dead and falling on a grave and, you know, just... And everybody just kind of, you know, each one supports the other one.
Yeah, and that's a bad step to do that. You know, if we're to make proper so that the general public or public Joe doesn't look down on us and think that, you know, there's a bunch of freaks running around, because the paranormal community in itself, and a lot of people don't understand this, is a very small community. It's not something that is worldwide, absolutely. But you take outside that parameter of the paranormal community, of the people who really do the work, it's very small. So therefore, when you look at this and you have people running around and, you know, they're drinking and they're doing paranormal investigations, or like you say, they're falling down and, you know, I've got something attached to myself. It's a demon, and every location has a demon in it. I sit and I shake my head. I honestly do.
Well, if you don't have a demon, it's not really a good investigation.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. You know, you can come to my house. I live in a house of estrogen. There's a bunch of demons here. My kids.
Well, you know, somebody once asked me, had I ever met the devil? Yeah, it was my first mother-in-law. There's no doubt in my mind. But, you know, some folks just don't get the humor.
Yeah, yeah, I know, I understand. To sit there and equate something that is not purposeful in doing what is right for the paranormal community. You've been around a long time, okay? I'm not going to say this to be demeaning in any which way, but looking at the grandfather clause and people who've been in it for such a long time, you fall in that category. So I'm not saying that in a bad way. What I'm saying is, there, you know, a fool will speak and a wise man will listen. And looking at the wise people in the world who do the proper for the community of the paranormal, there are very far few in between that there are people like you out there. There are more of the new generation of people who are coming out, running around with Walmart recorders, not knowing that a digital recorder is not the proper way to really record things and do a weekend warrior saying, look, I got a trophy for this weekend. Listen to this EVP. And what did you learn from that?
Oh, I've seen people do things that just leave me absolutely puzzled.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've used Walmart recorders when that's all there is to have.
Right.
When I'm relatively unprepared and somebody says, you know, this place has got spirits. Okay, fine. Let's set up something and see what we hear tonight. Wonderful. Sometimes you get something, sometimes you don't. But there's no point in making something up when you got nothing.
That's right. You know, you should walk into a place in the pretense of debunking first rather than walking into a place saying, I'm going to catch something. You always start at the bottom, work your way up. You don't start at the top, work your way down. You have to look at it in the aspect of, I'm going to this place, there may not be anything here, but it would be nice if we did catch something.
That's true. I told you earlier off the air about the little smelter trip we took. And we actually had an extraction fan carry on a conversation, which I thought was one of the most unusual things I'd ever seen. Even more unusual when we discovered that area was sealed off, because, of course, you know, air across the top can make it turn. But it was sealed off.
Right.
There was something unusual there. I just never did get to the bottom of it. However, it was definitely, you know, the guards are always responding to intrusions that are not intrusions, per se.
Right.
So when you've got something like that and you're out there, there's enough real that you don't need to make it up.
No.
It's the point.
Exactly. There, you know, every place there is in every town has spirit in it. And, you know, people say, well, the graveyard's full or this building's full or, you know, over here. People don't understand the fact of we're catalysts. And if they want to speak, they'll follow you wherever you go. They're free will. And if they want to communicate, they're going to make a noise, they're going to make something move, they will do that, not when you're demanding of it, but when they're ready to do it.
And when they don't want you there, they have unique ways of letting you know. One damn near drowned me, and I was just an innocent bystander.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
There was a solid floor that when I stepped on it, spun like a top and dropped me into 6 feet of water. I'd rather not go in again. And the next day when I went back to get some stuff that apparently I had dropped, that floor was solid. You couldn't make it move. But the night before, I went for a swim.
It's amazing.
I had another report, but that's neither here nor there.
No, you know, that's them wanting, you know, like you said, if they don't want you there, they'll make themselves known. We were in Perryville Battlefield, and there's a story in the book. We did a zigzag motion, Army style, through the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
We had two groups. So one group went to the east, one went to the west, and back and forth. Now, the battery, the south was on the top of the hill, and the north was down in the lower part of the valley. And so you got 4,000 men buried, you know, 4,000 plus men buried 2-3 feet deep right there in that battlefield. Well, I could hear them, and the people I was working with could see the shadow people. And at a brief moment, they were there, they were gone. So we were trying to do our investigation throughout the complete nights of doing this. And I hit a divot where a cannonball would have exploded. I fell in. I thought it was quite comical because one minute I'm talking, I'm level with Michael Esposito and the cameraman. Next minute, I'm down inside this divot and, you know, thinking, what the heck? The ground fell out from under me.
Yep.
So I'm getting up and I can hear them and I'm laughing and I got slapped and my hat went flying. And I remember looking over at Michael and I said, what the hell was that? And he jumped about 5 feet to the right. It was just amazing to see, you know, the reaction and how he heard what really happened. So, you know, them wanting you there or them not wanting you there, they were making their presence known for sure.
Oh, yes. And, you know, what was amusing, you know, I was carrying some fairly expensive stuff. The items I couldn't replace came through just fine. The items that could be replaced were destroyed.
Right.
And the floor had just held somebody as big as I am, not 30 seconds before, but under me it just spun like a top. And I literally glowed in the dark for the next hour and a half. Because it was runoff from what had been a uranium plant.
So you're like a glow-in-the-dark light bulb.
Hey, at times.
No, it's amazing. We were, oh my goodness. I talked to Rob Michaels. He played with the Google Dolls and Daughtry. And so I did this show out of L.A. He was on it. We went down to New Orleans back in 2007, just right after Katrina. We did a tour throughout the United States. And he was on the 11th floor. And so he says to me, the blue lights are going through my room, and I was in a hotel in Louisiana. So I call up, and I know the host of the show, and I said, I want to talk to Rob. And I was talking to Rob, and I said, you were at the Haunted Hilton, weren't you? And he says, yeah. How did you know? And I said, well, I was on the 12th floor, and you were on the 11th floor. And it was just amazing what transpired there. And if they wanted to know, let you know they were there, they were turning the TV off, they were knocking on the door, there was nobody in the hallway, the lights were on and off, the phone would ring, there's nobody there. It was amazing. So when they didn't want you in a certain area, there were certain things that you couldn't do. The doors would be locked, but they weren't locked. It was fantastic, you know, so like you going to become the glow daddy of the, you know, it's just amazing what they do.
Yep, I'll go with that. This area, I've talked to a lot of people that retired from there. And if you go to certain locations, you can actually hear the the workers who are long since dead still working.
Oh, I can imagine. And, you know, a lot of people think they're living in turmoil. You know, residual energy, quantum physics, the scientific side of it. And I worked with a lot of scientists. And I'm working right now with one of the head inventors for IBM and mm-hmm. also, like, Michael Esposito as well. And, you know, when we try to explain, we mesh both together, the scientific side and the spirituality. And we look at the fact that they're not stuck. It's not really residual. What they're doing is they're reliving what has happened. They want answers. And if you confront them and you give the proper answers, they will, you know, confide, or it's like me talking to you, you know, compassionately being a human being, speaking like a mature adult, talking and conveying messages. That's what they want. If they don't get that, they're going to let you know about it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And the there's been a number of incidents there at that location that, you know, literally defy rational explanation. But there's not been many to go out and seriously try to figure out what the hell's going on.
Yeah, you know, for the life of me, and looking at the individual you are or other people, like I'm just talking you and I because we're on the show. But
right.
I mean, if we look at the cumbersome list of who's eligible as an individual who can really have the credentials to go and do something and do it proper, it's hard to be in every place at every moment and to do everything that there is. You know, I find it fascinating, personally, that there's so much that does go on in this world. And we're just touching upon a brief little fragment of this thread. Ghosts, that's it. There's much more beyond that.
Oh, yeah. You know, the series that I write is called The History and Mystery of whatever I'm writing about, because I view history as one side and, you know, tales of the supernatural as the other side of history. It's all related.
Oh, absolutely.
And a lot of people have trouble understanding that.
You know, a lot of people get fixated, and in the work I do, and they try to understand, how can you talk to the other side and get a murderer's name? How can you get the location of where the body is? Well, you know, I don't demand them to give it to me. They give it to me, again, I'll use that word, catalyst. I'm there at the right time for the right purpose, for the right meaning, for what they want. Not what
right.
I want, for what they want. So, in saying so, when the information comes, it's, you know, we have the demographic of ghosts, we have the demographic of UFOs, we have the, you know, the third dimension, everything. People can't grasp that. They only see life and death and what takes part of after death. Some people don't understand. There is this other dimension. They just don't understand.
You know, I've listened to some so-called experts try to explain all this. In fact, one individual, his explanation was as good as anything I could have written, because I did write it in one of my books, and he was just parroting it back.
He was paraphrasing you.
No, he was word for word me. But the point I'm making is that a lot of folks who profess to have a thorough grasp and understanding of all this don't know anything more than anybody else does.
Well, that's just it. You know, you said it the best in the beginning of the show. We're all here and we're still learning.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. No one is an expert in any part of any field whatsoever. I always say to people that, you know, I had this lady I did a reading for, and she says she's going to go to this certificate place or whatever to, you know, get a certificate so that it'll boast her presence in the community so that she can do readings. I said, you know, who gave this other person the authority to hand out certificates saying that you are a psychic or a medium, as terms are used, and you know, who gave them this privilege to say that you are? And she couldn't come up with the answer. You know, nobody is an expert.
That's right. Because none of us are going to know until it's too late to do us any good here.
Absolutely. That's true.
And the I had the spokesperson for the so-called the legitimate front runners in the field as far as the public's concerned are the folks off Ghost Hunters. Very few people have any clue that they started out as plumbers, and people would tell them that the place was haunted when actually it was a plumbing problem. And it wound up becoming a hit show.
Yeah, no, it's true.
And they're absolutely great guys, and they make no, you know, they don't put on airs. They're just, you know, riding with it as long as it lasts.
They're just doing their thing.
Exactly. And everybody wants to be them.
Yes, and that is the old, you know, I could say cliche or adage, you know, we have to represent or, you know, present this field in this fashion. No, we don't. You present yourself in the ordinance that what is proper, and that being that if you belong to this field, well, you do what you do, they do what they do. They're not experts. They just have a show on TV.
Exactly. And trying to get that point across, though, can be somewhat difficult.
Yeah, true.
I had their PR, the PR guy for their main sponsor, which is Roto-Rooter, on my show, and we were talking about how all this came about. And, you know, he said it himself, you know. They started out trying to give people answers. And one thing led to another. And they did exactly what I would have done. People want to give you a TV show, go for it.
If it's beneficial, you know, I look at it this way. And a lot of people do know out there. I've been on a lot of different programs. I've turned down NBC. I've turned down many programs, a lot of programs, from biography to a lot of different programs. It doesn't sit well with me if it's not for the benefit of people rather than the benefit of a conglomerate's pocket. I won't do it. If it's a benefit for helping the enterprise of people in general, then I'm in for it.
Well, we have, it's always interesting. You know, I've had a lot of people want to do my show provided they'll give me a list of questions, and those are the questions that I ask. And I always refuse to do that. I don't do canned interviews. But we've covered a hell of a lot of topics.
Yeah, we have. And I forgot to send you my list of questions.
But so many people, within the framework of their list of questions, are experts. You know, from my military background, I always say that I don't fly air cover for my guests. Somebody asks you a question, give them an answer.
Right. Just be honest.
Exactly. If you don't know, say, I ain't got a clue.
That's right.
But you will not find any of the so-called experts ever saying that.
And, you know, that's funny because I guess you could chalk that up to being, you know, got to hold that persona, that ego, that position in what's so-called their life. You know what? Life is life. And every day it presents itself. There's enough to do in this day than worry about what people think of me yesterday. You know, that's the way I look at it because, you know, I have a mother call me up the other day and says, my daughter was 28, and people seen her on the roadside, and her boyfriend was fighting with her, And the next thing we know in the morning, she's dead. Well, the police don't know what to say. And, you know, I'm looking at this, and I said, was there a bridge nearby? And she says, yeah, they were, like, only feet from the bridge. And her, and she was, like, found at the bottom of the bridge. Well, he pushed her over. And there's no way of proving it because of the fact that, you know, there was nobody else that seen that happen. And his word, right? So, you know, in your day, you do what you can. You just do what you can. If you profess to be a liberated, you know, I don't know, Mussolini of, you know, profession, you know, there's always somebody out there who's going to step up and say, you know, look, you're not, and they're gonna come at you. Just do what you can do, and people will respect that.
Yeah, being shy of retiring like I am, you know, I rarely, you know, profess to do much besides gather the information.
Yeah, you know, that's it. I love the scientific side of it. I do. I love watching what is done purposefully. I love the spiritual side of it because then with one, you get the other, and you put them together, you have a definitive. It's amazing when you see a positive come out of that. Collecting information. We're here. That's what it is. We're seeking the truth.
Yep. Exactly right. Well, we've done about, well, almost 40 minutes of this segment. And I've got enough questions. We could do, you know, it's a 3-hour show. But when we were talking off air, you know, we discussed the fact that, and you know, I've heard about you from various different people, but it wasn't until I came across your book that I took steps to try to, you know, to get your publisher to arrange me to have you on the show. But you have to forgive my curiosity. Because, and I've been doing this for over 20 years, and I've probably had 500 psychics that I've interviewed, and I can count on both hands the good ones, and some couldn't find their rear with both hands and a flashlight.
Right.
I asked you what you thought was going to happen with me over the next 60 days, and you said you would do it on the air.
Yeah.
So I re-ask my question. What's going to happen with me over the next 60 days?
You know, I look at you, I just have actually your picture. I just got your picture up on the screen. That's what I do. So I just have your picture up on my screen.
And I do want to... For the listening audience, we have never physically met. This is our second conversation.
Yeah, and this is the longest part of the conversation. You know, I look at your picture, and I see the fact that this being taken on the road, not like almost like being put on TV video of on, what's it called, computer. Internet, your program. Now, and also I see it like a joining of two, now if it's two programs or two stations, but something being joined. So it's going to be of a conglomerate, something being joined.
Okay.
Your show being taken in that aspect. But it's funny, I also get down another point here, political view on altered states, meaning conspiracies, and et cetera, and getting very more deep into things like that.
Okay.
Well, let's do that much first.
All right.
So is that where that's going?
I'm working on a book called The Puppet Masters, which is about the Kennedy conspiracy. I've got information that's never been published before. We are looking at putting the show on the road I've done it so far from Las Vegas and from, I did it from someplace else. Don't remember where.
Well, I'll tell you right now, but just you know, you're going on the road. Well, I want to be a part of it. Go ahead.
Okay.
Finish.
And we are, I'm waiting for final clearance for a television version of this show that will be on cable.
Cool. I see from just that, that's pretty much a good hit in the conspiracy part of it. I will tell you this. Don't wander too far away from, and I know you are deep into the ghost aspect, finding the information, but I really feel the fact of, you know, being that, I know you're in the Army, so I know like the Sergeant Major type of going deep into conspiracy, deep into the secret society type thing.
Yep.
Careful. That's all, that's what comes to me for you. So that is for you, as the caution sign that comes, just careful.
Okie dokie. The, one of the things that the puppet masters will do is actually name names. So you may well be correct.
Yeah, just careful. I'm trying to elaborate a little more. I know it's hard, like, doing this live on air. As I draw, I'm actually sketching, and I draw the three rings. So whatever the three rings entail, and they're, like, joined. Like, they're all joined. It's funny, I draw three rings, and I draw three definite lines. It's all tied in here. Just be careful.
Okay. Be interesting to I've had the information that I'm getting ready to publish for 20 years and not released it. And I think it's time that it went. So it will be you know, the names that I'll be naming have not been brought up in relation to the Kennedy assassination before.
Right. So that's where the conspiracy comes in.
Yep.
The political views of altered states. So that's what I wrote down, is a dash, political view on the altered states, meaning conspiracy.
Well, do you, how long do you see my show running for?
The new one coming?
Well, that will just be an extension of this one.
Right. I can see that your show will take on a little different, more variety. Like I'm saying, you're going into something that's going to be more anxiety, more fun, but fearful of what, you know, the unknown is, which is going to be good. It'll be a good show. I just see the caution sign about the conspiracy and delving into that part of it. And yep. You're mentioning names and things. Just careful.
Well, my grandfather always told me to do unto others before they get a chance to do unto you, so I'm going to be ready to do.
You do what you got to do.
That's what he used to say. Well, do you see it all being successful?
Absolutely, I do. I see it more than successful, and that's why I said to you prior to this, I would love to be part of it. And I know I'm self-inviting myself. And I'm no fool. Believe me, I know I see good stuff. So
I think it would be a very interesting combination.
It would.
Now, we're getting ready to do something that's not been done before on the internet in regard to this show. Do you see that being successful?
You know, again, I'm going to go back to what I said, a proposed joining of two forces here. It's almost like two stations into one program, taking you on the forefront and creating this TV-type internet program. You mentioned you're doing the cable TV show, but I see this going on to the internet as well. I see this being taken on the road. I see this being bigger than anything that's out there, sponsors. I see, you know, not your local little do-drop-in sponsors or what have you. I see major sponsors. This will be big.
Oh, very good. I'm all for that. What we're getting ready to do has never been done for an individual before. It's been done for corporations. I guess I'm kind of the test subject for the group that is putting it together for me. If I can make it successful, then they're going to take it, you know, worldwide.
And that'll be good.
And, you know, I don't want much out of life. I just want to be fabulously wealthy and get to chase my mysteries and ghosts all over the country.
And I think you have a better half, right?
Yeah, I do, who is sound asleep.
And I think your better half is the boss. And I think you've done, you know, she'll do you right.
Well, I always tell folks that I rule this house with a firm hand. Of course, occasionally that comes up for debate. I don't know why she hasn't yet learned after all these years to say yes sir and no sir. But those who know my wife are aware that she does have her opinions. She just has not yet learned that I'm always right.
You know, women are the most secretive weapon in a marriage. They are very tactful. They're very organized. And being a gentleman from the armed forces, I think you got your hands full.
Well, it's... You know, right now I'm looking at 3 hours a night being, you know, a heck of a lot of airtime.
Yes.
But if this goes as you said it's going to go and as I hope it will go, that'll only be the beginning of what I'll be doing each week.
Yes, and there will be a better organization of your time as well. I'll, you know, off topic, off reading you, and just telling you how my life is personally, I'm governed, and when I do a lot of things from, you know, movie scripts and talking, the book or books, getting ready to shoot another movie, and also touring. So I have to be able to say, I can do this, I can do that, and I turn to the boss, and she says, okay or no.
Unfortunately, and occasionally she gets me into things that I just do not want to do.
Right.
But, you know, that's neither here nor there. So you think I'm getting ready to embark on a successful path?
Yeah. We have the Norries of the world. We have the, you know, the Keelers of the world. I was on Keeler's show in New York. I was on the old Howard Stern. We have all those, you know, JV and Elvises. We have all those people out there. They're fast. They are glutton for punishment type programming. I don't see you like that. I see you more sophisticated, upfront. This is what you get, and people are going to love it. There's only a few programs that I really, truly enjoy and actually endorse. And I'm telling you, there's only a few, and I mean that's three or four.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not many out there. Very good topic, good discussion, you know, open up and brilliant for the audience, because then they partake in what is really happening, and they can sit back and evaluate what the show is about and understand. Your program is going to be like that.
Hmm. Well, I just got word today that phase one kicks off the first part of October instead of the end. So, I'd like to see you part of it. You know, a lot of folks that I deal with, even those who have what I judge to be true ability, and I don't really know why, but occasionally seem almost intimidated by what they're able to do. And that's something that shouldn't be. I suspect you and I could have some far-ranging discussions that could certainly go on at great length.
I would love that.
And, of course, some of the places I plan on going to film, because I had never wanted to get into filming until recently, and that seems to be the wave of the future. Right now, this show is being simulcast on, I have a little internet TV station. But I'm looking at going far beyond that.
And it will. I don't know what else to tell you but other than it will.
Okay. Actually, you said you live in Canada?
Yes, I do.
I was informed the other day that we're actually going to go to Canada next year. Well, actually, I was informed a while back. I'm a little hesitant about the concept, but that looks like that's where we're going.
Well, you know, beautiful place, and I don't know if you've been. But
never have.
Oh, you'll love it. Come on up here. We're crazy Canucks.
I did go to where Marilyn Monroe stood in where her footprints are in Niagara Falls, but that's as far as I've been.
You know, I love my life. I love my job. I travel throughout, you know, all of the United States, all of Canada, and I've done murder cases in France, you know, in Europe. I love my job. I'm not going to lie. And once you get a taste of coming to Canada, which, you know, we're actually your 52nd state, so, you know, count us in. You know, it's just going to be something where it's not a foreign land. You'll come here. You'll do your job. Hopefully I'm a part of it. I am saying that very loud and very clear.
Okay.
And, you'll enjoy. And because your program is going to be something that's going to be, you know, like I said, there's not too much out there that I really enjoy. And now a lot of people out there who are tuning in, who know me, are probably going to get a kick out of this. And I'm going to get a lot of mail. But I don't watch ghost shows on TV. And I just don't. I'm an author who writes books. I've been in 2 bestsellers. And I write with award-winning screenwriters and what have you, but I don't read. I don't read them. That's the type of individual I am. I set the record. I put it down. I do what is right. And like we said in the beginning of the show, you tell the truth. You do what is right. You put it so people can better, you know, become betterment of that or part of it. It's not about you or me. It's about everybody. So it's just amazing how that is. And heck, yeah, I'd love to be a part of your show.
Okay, I've written 50, excuse me, I've written, by the end of the year I'll have 50 out. I've written, my 45th book is coming out next month, and when I finish writing it, I'm done with it. I mean, I did what I wanted to do, and I go on to something else, and that seems to surprise the hell out of people.
Yeah, that's exactly the feeling, isn't it? Once you're done, well, it's done. Nah, what's next?
And I have, chased ghosts, and I think there's 15 books in that in the ghost series, and I have been all over God's creation. And sometimes I wind up just telling the story. I don't really spend a whole lot of time, looking for them because the stories are history, and as the people that know the stories die, the history's gone.
Right. Right.
So sometimes I'm just, telling historical stories. Other times I'm in there chasing dead cheerleaders and just having a good time.
I got a little funny for you real quick.
All right.
We were in the hotel. We just got done doing Al Capone's Speakeasy in the Chicago area. And I was with Christopher O'Brien, who does a lot of cattle mutilations, has been on National Geographic and what have you. Well, the producer was in his room, and we were knocking on the door, and Christopher was making his voice like a maid, like a woman, and he was on the phone. He says, "I don't need my roommate up right now," and he kept doing that over and over and over, and Ron was getting upset, and he kept yelling out the door, "I don't need my roommate up right now." Well, the last time he did it, he goes, "Just a minute, we can hear him inside the room." He says, "I got this maid outside my door, and she's not letting me leaving me alone. I'm going to go and tell her right now." So we took off around the corner, and as he opened the door, this poor maid came out of the room across the way from him, directly across. And as he opened the door, she turned and she was facing him, and he goes, "Look it, lady, I told you, I don't need my roommate." And oh, she was just sitting there, and he was going up and down her. It was like amazing how he was yelling at her, and she almost had tears in her eyes. It was funny. Oh, but yeah, chasing cheerleaders and maids of hotels, unbelievable.
Well, the some of the places, I've just missed seeing the things I wanted to see, but I've collected some unbelievable stories. One very prominent female business executive went to what's it called? I'm blanking out on the name of the hotel in San Antonio, the one right by the Alamo. And it's known for being haunted.
Right.
And it's known for being haunted by a maid and, a number of other different spirits. And this trip, she went by herself. She wakes up the next morning, and she can feel her husband, laying up against her, the warmth of another body. And as she's waking up, it dawns on her, she came on that trip by herself. And then she feels the individual laying behind her, up against her, get out of bed, hears him walk over and shut the bathroom door and the water come on in the shower. And she's now fully awake going, "I'm here by myself."
Right.
So she gets up and she tiptoes over to the bathroom door. She can hear the water. She can hear somebody moving. Eases the door open, looks in, there's steam coming from the hot water, and the curtain is pulled, enclosing the shower, and she, gets something heavy, goes over, grabs the curtain, rips it open, ready to hit whoever's there, and there's nobody there. There's all kinds of stories like that from some of these Texas cities.
Yeah, I can't wait. I promise you, I'll be down there sometime. And when I do, we'll have to go and do one of your most active places.
Okay. That sounds good. And I should get, let me ask you this. Since you have told me everything that so far that's in the mix, let me ask you this.
If you keep asking me, I'm going to send a bill.
Hey, if it all comes out as you say, that's wonderful. How soon am I going to get to go ahead on the TV show?
You know, it was funny because, and then again, I'm going to three rings, right? So I'm looking down more along the lines of like 90-day plus. But it doesn't mean you're not doing the work for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a lot of pre-production. There's a lot of ongoing. There's one more person coming involved. I don't know if they're wanting this or waiting for this to go through. You can tell me because I see that. It's almost like bringing another person in or another venturer in on this program. But I see the three. So like 30 days.
Interesting. I wonder who that would be. Well, whatever it takes, if it means I dress up like a chicken and run around out front of the buildings downtown, I'll be more than happy to do it.
Yeah. And advertise those free steaks.
Hey, I got to do what I got to do.
Yes, you do.
I'm even doing something I only do once a year. I'm doing a free ghost tour Saturday before Halloween in front of one of the haunted hotels here in El Paso, and then take people around downtown. Last year I had 150 people show up for it.
How cool is that?
And I'll have a new book out by then. I release a new ghost book every Halloween. So it could well... You said, I'm being introduced to somebody in 3 days who certainly has, I am told, the credentials to assist in a TV show.
In 3 days. So the three rings is the three that I see.
Well, that could well be.
There you are.
Well, the problem is, no matter... Let's say it becomes the biggest thing that anybody's ever seen. I'm still going to be chasing more. Sometimes it's just the chasing that's the fun.
Well, that's just it. You know, every investigation, every interlude, or like my book is called, Paranormal Encounter,
yep.
That you have is like the very first time. It should be that way.
Well, I certainly, if you want to take a hand, I'm all for it.
Absolutely. Just give me a ring. I'm there.
Okie dokie. I think it definitely could wind up being a quite an interesting venture.
I would like it.
And then, of course, some ghosts have tricky timing like that, poor maid. Oh. One of the people in the chat room was talking about the maid incident that you mentioned.
Yeah, I know, that was funny.
Well, certainly, there was a restaurant in Albuquerque where quite often the one of the waitresses would go around with the dessert cart and take the orders. And people, now this place was built in the early 1800s, been continually occupied as a house or a restaurant until 6 or 8 years ago. Now it's empty, or it was empty the last time I was there. And people would sit and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait, and finally they'd call the manager and say, where's our dessert? Well, who did you give the order to? And they would describe the waitress. The restaurant did not and never has had a dessert cart. It's one of the ghosts that haunts the place who likes to play tricks on people.
Now that is cool. There's a place up here in Ontario, Canada. When you come here, I don't know if I should let it out. You know, they've filmed there before. A&E's filmed there. There's many of them filmed there. Port Perry. There are people from yesteryear that'll be dressed up in the garb or the clothing of back then. You and I will walk in, and I'll see a woman, and I'll start talking to her, and this is what they say. The woman will be there. She'll carry on the conversation. Yeah, I don't see the gentleman, but yeah, you carry on a conversation with the gentleman and the woman. And this happens broad daylight, any time of the day, and it's amazing. It's one of the most haunted eateries up in Ontario.
There's a place in New Mexico called Cloudcroft. And there is a young lady by the name of, what is her name? Heidi, do you know what the name of the ghost at the Cloudcroft is? Anyway, she's a beautiful young lady with long red hair. And I had some people approach me, and they didn't really know how to tell me what they wanted to tell me. And finally I said, well, just spit it out. And I had written about the ghost in my book, The History and Mystery of New Mexico. And they had gone there for their honeymoon, and they had their photograph taken on the hearth. This used to be, at one point it was a big home, and then it became a hotel. Rebecca's her name. Yeah, Heidi just told me through the chat room. And Rebecca was a maid who may well have had extracurricular activity. She had a fiancé, or at least he thought he was her fiancé, who was a lumberjack. And supposedly, he returned unexpectedly to find her carrying on her extracurricular job, and she vanished that night. Well, when this couple is sitting at the on the hearth having their photograph taken, they get back home, they develop their pictures, and there, sitting behind them on the hearth, looking over the head of the wife, is Rebecca, the ghost.
That's cool.
And in fact, her picture is in my book. But she loves to deal with those who are newlyweds. And frankly, I understand she's also given surprises to individuals who think she's real. She's still carrying on her extracurricular activity.
Sign me up. No, just kidding.
Well, there's a number that did try, and it didn't quite work out the way they anticipated.
Yeah, that's a whole different show. Yeah, could you see that? Oh, my goodness. I wouldn't even go there. That is hilarious. I would be tickled pink just to be able to see, you know, or be part of something like that. That'd be funny.
Well, from the picture I've seen of her in life, I'd like to be part of that, too.
You know, we're stretching it here. It's almost come, instead of paranormal investigation, it's called paranormal porno. It's getting different. It's not good.
Well, you have to keep in mind that this show has always been described as kind of unique.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. You might be just hiring Rebecca soon if you keep that up.
Well, I'm in the studio by myself, so and she's asleep by now, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
But it's, you know, if you're, I say if because that's how I look at life. Everything comes to pass as you've described. It's going to be a hell of a ride.
Yeah, you know, my mom asked me a long time ago when I was a kid, what am I going to do? And I said, I'm going to write a book, I'm going to be in a movie, and I will be on TV, Ma. And, you know, this is when I'm a four-year-old kid. Well, as you know, I wrote more than one. I've been in more than one movies, and I've been on TV. It's amazing to see what comes in life and what you can see. I described earlier how sitting there and they want to know where the body of the little girl is, and I'm drawing sketches and I'm showing them exactly where her body is with the tree line, the big pile of rocks, and the Mennonite village, and the actual, you know, horse and buggies, the wheels, the wagon wheels and stuff, and piece it all together. Well, that's where her body was found. Just like giving the murderer's name of the little boy who was murdered in Kentucky, you know. Seeing things, it's funny, and I just never take it for granted. Do I believe in God? Absolutely. That's my faith. I carry it forward. I just give thanks for my day, and I just take nothing for granted. Never.
Well, it's interesting. Until I was 14, I could tell you how much change you had in your pocket if you asked me and I answered immediately.
Right.
People reacted so strangely, I just stopped. And, you know, occasional flashes, not like it used to be by any means. During some of my escapades around the world, it came back when it was needed, but it's not something I can call up on and know that it's going to happen.
Right.
I guess that was from my suppressing it.
You know, I look at my own children, and it's a great way you just explain that, suppressing. I don't know if we get older, we get hardened. You know, we become that old skeptical, cynical self, and we want more proof. I don't think it's the proof that we want, because we've already been there. We've already been proved to ourselves. We want more, the tangible. We want to touch the other side. It's like, you know, there's been 5 different production companies approach me for doing a TV series just as recently, since the book went bestseller. And there's one program that they're giving me the leeway to, which I really love, and I'm going to push the boundaries. We want to go beyond anything that's on TV that you'll ever see ever. You know, just for example, you know, just for fun, if I go into the Bermuda Triangle and don't come back, well, you know, the show's a hit, right?
Yeah.
That type of thing. So that's what we're looking at. And it's one thing to do murder cases, TV, books, you know, many shows. Sure enough, do you get tired? Yeah, you get tired of it. But you know what? You keep doing it. It's like doing that very first paranormal investigation again, and you're doing it over, and everything's different all the time. For the love of people, that's what it's about.
Well, years ago in college, Charles Berlitz came to speak to the class, and I got to talking with him about, you know, strange disappearances and the Bermuda Triangle and all that, and he told me stories that wasn't in his book, and I told him stories he'd never heard before. And he invited me to go to the Bermuda Triangle with him. And unfortunately, that summer, I had a date to go play with Uncle Sam. But I bought several of his books just on the off chance he didn't come back. And he came back. But he came back.
Right.
And we corresponded for a while, but, you know, there's so many people that are fascinated by some of those mysteries that were never admitted in public.
Oh, absolutely. There's so much in this world. I've seen things as yourself. You know, people who are hearing me right now, I was looking at photographs with Christopher O'Brien, and I'm saying, what's that dog doing? It looks like ridiculous. One photo after another, there's this dog. They're out standing in the desert. They got the maps out, and they're reading the maps. The 4 or 5 people, they're looking at where they're going to go. And Christopher's snapping shots of this dog running around, all different zigzagging motions, snapping in the air. And he goes, keep looking at the pictures. And I keep turning the picture over and over, and I'm looking at this crazy dog. All of a sudden, there's this one picture, and I throw it down. Holy crap, what's that? He goes, they call those desert dragons. And it's about 2 feet high, it's got a wingspan, and it's running along the ground. And the dog was chasing that. You couldn't see it with the naked eye. But the camera caught it finally. And he goes, I didn't know what I caught until I developed the film.
Hmm.
Amazing.
That's interesting. I had a dog like that cost me $20 once. I went to an old cemetery. It's called Smelter Cemetery, and the smelter, a town grew up around it.
Right.
And it had everything. It had its own cemetery. They made the coffins there. They had a chapel. If somebody died who worked there, everything was handled on the property. And when I went up to look at it, you know, normally it's off limits to everybody, but I've kind of become considered eccentric because of the books and what have you. And they said, go up there, but when you get up there, you'll see a dog. I said, okay. He said, we bet you $20 you can't take a photograph of it. What do you mean I can't take a photograph of a dog? I've been taking pictures for years. Well, $20. I went up there, and sure enough, in this old cemetery on this mesa, you know, windswept, the freeway is a quarter of a mile away, but you can't hear it. I mean, it feels like you're on the other side of the world.
Right.
And there sat this dog just kind of staring at me. And I raised my camera to take his picture, and he literally dives behind the tombstone. I put the camera down, he comes out. We did this for 45 minutes. Before I gave up. Went back down and paid him the $20, and I said, whose dog is it? Nobody knows. The dog has been there as long as anybody can remember. People see him, but you can't take his picture.
Isn't that something?
Oh, there's all kinds of strange things like that around this town.
Yeah, you know, that is amazing. That's something I love to see.
Well, you come down here. Well, I got another camera. We'll both try.
Yeah, and then I'll owe you $20.
Hey, got to get my money back.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do.
Tell me about it. Frankly, there's so many mysteries in this town that it's just amazing.
Is that what they call pay it forward?
Play it forward?
Yeah, pay it forward. I pay you the $20. I'm paying it forward now. I can't catch the dog.
Of course.
Of course.
You know, keep in mind that quite often what you see, at least around that area, you may see it, but I won't. And I might see it, and you won't.
Interesting.
Now, I've had a number of people tell me about those little incidents.
Right.
And there's a friend of mine who has a complete photograph album of literally dead cowboys sitting on horses at cemeteries. Some of the photographs he's taken are just absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing what's out there. It truly is. Again, you know, going back to the beginning of the program, a lot of people out there who are tuning in for the first time or for, you know, who've been in the paranormal have only investigated ghosts. There's much more out there that... It's a broad scope. It's big. It's huge.
Yep, absolutely correct. And most people wouldn't know what they were looking at if it walked up and bit them.
That's true too.
There's one place in town. I've had a half a dozen people swear to me that there are problems with time at that specific spot. And in fact, the city's closed off one of them because of that.
Almost like a porthole.
Exactly. And I've talked to a number of people that have experienced it, and they tell me that it wasn't their imagination. It absolutely happened just the way they said it happened. And
I do. I've got to come down there and check that out with you.
And when I told the city I wanted to start doing ghost tours downtown, initially they wanted me to get, you know, a couple of dozen permits and this and that and the other, and finally somebody with a brain walked up and said, go do it, but be sure to tell us what you find. just in one of those tones of voices that made you kind of look at him and go, huh?
Yeah. It's almost like, welcome to Mayberry.
Tell me about it. Absolutely. And it was some of the things we have come across. Certainly, I'm starting to understand exactly what they were talking about. Because there are some weird things in this town.
Oh, it's amazing. That, you know, it's intriguing. You know, it is. There are things in my lifetime, personally, what I have seen. And every time something comes up, like what you're talking about, it's intriguing. It's like starting all over again. You know, there's so much to life. And there's so much to learn. It's amazing.
Yep. I've got, I did a ghost tour at a historic cemetery. And there was a young lady on the tour who was wearing a lot of us could have watched her all night. What she was wearing was very, it wasn't, you know, out of line, so to speak, but she gave it a new dimension. And she's wearing a very low-cut blouse. And we do the tour, and she was, you know, clearly enjoying the tour. And we got to the end of it, which was right by the burial site of John Wesley Hardin, the man that was the fastest gun that ever lived, supposedly. And people could have handled the fact that he was a fast gun and killed a lot of people. What upset everybody is he became an attorney while he was in prison. And, you know, in those days, fast guns had higher reputations than did attorneys, which frankly is still the case.
Right.
And she's sitting there by, there are two benches on either, his gravesite is in a cage, frankly, because his relatives wanted to come dig him up and take him back home to sell tickets to come in and see his gravesite. Big battle. So she's sitting there, and one of the psychics that I had on the show came over to me, and she said, Hardin has left his gravesite and has gone over to stand behind that girl. First time I ever envied a ghost. Mm-hmm. And then she said, now he's looking down her blouse. Well, he may be dead, but he hadn't forgotten what's going on. Now he's reaching for it. At that moment, she crossed her arms across her chest, which I thought was interesting, you know, the timing.
Right.
And I went over and I said, are you cold? And she said, no, I had the strangest feeling I was about to get groped. Well, I got to know her and found out that she is somewhat psychic herself.
Right.
And she actually sensed somebody coming up behind her and reaching for her. And I've had a number of others who have been on my tours in that area when I was, you know, doing a lot of them, who also told me there was a lot of activity around certain graves. And that they would, the spirits would actually follow my tour around the cemetery because they like to listen to the stories.
Right.
But that particular evening was one of the most fascinating things I'd ever seen, because that was the first experience I had with them actually leaving their gravesite.
Well, that's really cool. You know, even, you know, like, he's dead, right? But he's still got the eye for, you know what I mean?
Hey, you're dead, but not dead.
Yeah, you're dead, but you're not dead. You know, that's amazing. You know, I tell people in the very first book I ever wrote, I wrote, usually you get another author, as you know, or someone who is in the eye of the public to write your foreword for you.
Exactly.
I wrote this up, and I thought, wow, I don't need an author, because the pen that actually wrote it was from Spirit. And what it showed me was they're not dead on the other side. And what it was shown was all the churches, synagogues, and temples and what have you is but man-made, but it's monumental and it's majestic. But then when I was told to turn around and look into the gates, and then there was no gates, and then looking right into the courtyard, there were people all around, people who, you know, who have passed over and were getting taught to love themselves again, and the healing process, and people doing everything that we do just on the other side. And it was amazing that I was told to turn back and look again. I looked back again at all the reverence that was there, all the buildings, and it was just beautiful, both sides. And they said, but that's the footstool to what is to come. And, you know, just what you said, you know, he's not dead because he's alive, and it's amazing.
And she was quite an attractive young lady. Actually, but... I do have to say that he certainly has not lost his eye for beauty.
Oh, yeah, that's funny. That's funny. You know, it's the ghost tales, and we've seen them on TV where they've actually reached out and touched people or pulled their hair. I took the boys from Fort Campbell, was in Kentucky, before they were going over to Iraq, and they wrote me and they said they wanted to come on my tour stop in Kentucky. And would I let the platoon come? And I said, absolutely. You guys just come on down. So they brought their wives and the whole platoon. They all came down. And we took them out to a couple places in Kentucky and did ghost hunting. It was amazing to see their eyes as, you know, one lady's hair got pulled straight out. The coat hangers were moving all by themselves, and they all stopped. You know, it was intriguing, you know, to watch them. Because you can tell they really enjoyed themselves, because that was their first interlude of really getting in depth with the other side.
Well, it's interesting you say Fort Campbell. I was born not too far from there, in Tennessee, Murfreesboro.
Right.
Now, I grew up in a house, as I say, that had quite, while the family always denied it, there was no doubt in my military mind that there was something going on in that house. But as I say, I was assured I was crazy, so.
Yeah, we're all nuts, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In a handbag.
But it was, you know, 1815 was a long time, and that's when the first part of the house was built. And when my grandmother moved out of it, while I was overseas, or I would have bought it, as my uncle walked across the back doorstep, the door threshold with the last piece of furniture, the entire ceiling in the kitchen came down. Had he been a foot back, he would have been killed.
Wow.
And when they got to looking at why that had happened, when that place was first built, the Indians were still on the warpath in Tennessee. And there was a place up above the kitchen, which had been the original part of the house, where you would hide from the Indians. Well, somehow, some way, over the years, a hairline crack had appeared in the roof. And since that hidden room was up there, nobody knew it was leaking.
Right.
And nobody knew how long it had been leaking. But it had stored all that water, and the day they moved out, it said, okay, I quit. The ceiling came down, the entire power system ceased to function. They never could find a reason why it quit. And the plumbing system began to act up. So they had to rewire it, rebuild the roof in the kitchen, or rebuild the ceiling. But all that happened only after they had left the house. As long as they were in the house, everything was fine. Which always made me wonder.
Yeah, it's amazing how that happens.
And of course, that was the area where I kept seeing, you know, strange happenings.
Right.
So maybe I wasn't crazy.
Nope. You know, looking back as a kid, you know, going back to when you were a child, if you would have come out and said things like that, oh boy, you know, society itself would have crucified you.
Of course.
You know, and even in my time, you know, people would have downfalled and looked bad. My peer section would have just, you know, crushed me. So I'm glad that we're able to come out and talk about it now, because everybody who's inquisitive, everybody who wants to know or who's in the know, can actually let everything out and say, I did encounter this when I was younger, and yes, I, you know, I've seen something like this. And it's, why should we hide it? It's like the UFOs out there. You know, the government is releasing documents now and top secret stuff that
yep.
they're out there. So why did we have to hide it in the first place?
Because we can't handle the truth.
Yeah, you just stole that line from the movie.
Well, of course, you know, they wrote it first.
That's right. Plagiarism. There you go.
Hey, I got enough of that around here. I may as well do it, too.
There you go. Are we allowed to take a bathroom break?
Well, actually, we've gone over our, good Lord, we've gone an hour and a half.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Did we really? That went by fast.
Yes, it did. So, actually, you have finished the hour I asked you to do.
Well, you know, I didn't even know we went over an hour. That was pretty good. I've really enjoyed myself. I love your program. I hope I've done you right by telling you what I've done and what I've done for you, because I can see it happening. It's amazing, you know. I want to carry on a conversation with you more sometime soon.
Okay.
If you'll allow that.
By all means.
Good. I've really enjoyed myself, Ken.
Well, I do thank you for being with me.
No, it's a pleasure. It truly is. And, yes, please have me back.
I definitely will.
Great.
Thank you.
And you have a wonderful evening.
Same to you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, that was Robbie Thomas, who has helped police and families internationally in murder and missing person cases for at least 17 years. And he starred in the critically acclaimed hit movie Dead Whisper, and has done quite a number of investigations and one other movie called Robbie Thomas Visits the Sally House. So, definitely liked having him on the show. Okay. I want to remind you, this hour is brought to you by The Garden, 511 Western, right near Union Depot. And Saturday, I will have gift coupons, not only for The Garden, but for Jeske's Fire Grill, which is on Lee Trevino in the Town Center Shopping Center. They've got the best handmade hamburgers on the planet. And if you're telling me you heard about it on the Ken Hudnall Show, I'll appreciate it. And I'll be giving away on Saturday. $25 gift coupons. We're going to have a little drawing every hour or so. So, y'all come by now, you hear? All right. There are, in this country, well, on this planet, many unexplainable events. In Nevada, for example, the book I'm working on right now, which is the history and mystery of currently the working title is History and Mystery of Sin City, but I'm probably going to change it to something else. We got not only the ghost. You see me. It adds a little extra flair to the Blog Talk world. Well, I appreciate you watching. You must be at KenHudnall.com looking at Mega Television Network. And I'm waiting to hear about the cable show. Looks like all indications it's going to go. So you'll be seeing me on TV. We'll also, before Christmas, be coming out with audiobooks. And right now, we are in the process of getting my books up on Kindle, the Sony e-book store, and we're trying to figure out what the hell the Nook is doing. But my point is, you're going to find my books every place. And I'm going to be traveling the country once this thing kicks off. And we're going to be, on a lot of the ghost shows, they go in with their fancy equipment and they talk about EMF readings and, frankly, who cares? What I find fascinating personally is a little bit about the history and a little bit about the other side of history, which is what the stories of the hauntings and the unsolved mysteries are. And to me, more interesting than watching people wander down darkened halls with EMF meters and whispering to each other about what's that moving off in the dark, it's a whole lot more interesting to just be told the story. Now, Gray Artist says, I've heard about ancient stones on the Upper East Coast that may be like Stonehenge. You ever heard of those? Well, actually, that's part of the same complex that has a place called Mystery Hill. Now, Mystery Hill was old when the colonists first arrived. And the only theory they could come up with was they had been built by Native Americans, which was disproved. Well, storytelling is what I plan on giving you. Now, Mystery Hill has never been properly dated because you can't date stone because stone is as old as stone is. You have to have something like bone or tissue or something like that to date. But they were old, and the Indians didn't even have legends about them when the colonists first arrived on the East Coast. But they're not the oldest. Now, also on the East Coast, I talked about it the other night, there's actually a grave of a Templar that dates back to about 1400. Now, there was the Kensington Runestone, which was a stone that was found covered with ruins, which was the writing done by the Vikings. And it tells about an exploration. Yes, a Templar. It tells about an exploration that was done by a group of Vikings. Part of their group was massacred, and the others laid out the story by carving ruins into this stone. And it was estimated that that was long before the colonists showed up. You see, Columbus was actually a late arrival. He came in 1492. The Templars were destroyed as an order in 1100. They started in 1107, were destroyed in 1309. Now, after 1309, supposedly the order was no more. However, a lot of Templars escaped from France, and no one ever knew where they went. But that gravesite, that headstone, has the coat of arms of one of the Templars that dates back to about mid-1300s. It's known that they had one of the largest navies. In fact, their navy was bigger than most countries. And the Templar treasure and the Templar fleet vanished the same night that the night before everybody was arrested. Now, Oak Island off the coast of Nova Scotia has been rumored to be where the Templar treasure was hidden. But the Templars also came to North America, and they did some exploration. We also know that 2,000 years ago, there was a Roman colony that settled outside of Tucson. This took place during the time of Nero. When Rome was set afire, which was actually done by Nero, Roman Christians were blamed, and a lot of them decided the smart thing to do was run. Well, there was no place in the known world they could run because Rome had a long arm. So they sailed to the west. They landed in the Gulf of Mexico. It's thought they landed either in Alabama or Louisiana, and they marched northwest until they arrived outside of Tucson, where they built a smaller version of Rome. It lasted for a couple of hundred years until they decided to do what had been done in the early days of Rome, which was take slaves. The only slaves around to take were the Indians, who took a dim view of it. They actually wiped out the colony twice. After the second attack, the records were done that told the story, buried, and then the survivors marched west and vanished into history. There have been Roman weapons found as far north as Indiana. Kelly Roy says, my relaxed demeanor reminds her of Art Bell. Well, you know, telling the stories, it's fun. Now, back in about 700 or 800 A.D., a Welsh prince I remember Ironsides. There was a Welsh prince who lost a political disagreement. Now, in those days, political disagreements involved a lot of swordplay. So he and his followers took ship and sailed to the west, landed on the southern coast of Alabama, or what is now Alabama, and they marched north. In fact, in the backwoods of Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, and up into Tennessee, you'll find ruins that are built along the... now, the prince, his name was Modoc. He was Welsh, and you'll find a lot of ruins built in the Welsh fashion. Now, the legend had always been that he was in an engagement with the Indians. He was actually shot with an arrow and killed. And he was taken back to the ancestral burial ground in Wales. Well, there was an ancient church that it was decided to renovate. And one wall looked odd. So they carefully, in the renovation, removed the top layer. And they discovered underneath it was a mural. And the mural showed Prince Modoc being shot by an individual with a bow and arrow wearing a feather in his hair. Now, we also have found in this country tablets written in ancient Hebrew that talk about business deals being done in this country. Also up in Michigan, around the Great Lakes, there are ancient mines. A lot of copper was mined. Tons of it was mined. That are so ancient, no one has a clue when they were mined or who could have had the technology to do it. When the Spaniards explored the Southwest, they found mound cities, huge mounds that from the air looked like different animals, but only from the air. And the legend says that these mound cities, they were walled, built on top of the mounds, were the home of a race of giants who routinely used to attack and decimate the Indian tribes. And finally the Indians band together and destroyed the race of giants. And that dates back, if I remember correctly, that dates back to like 300 or 400 AD. Now, theoretically, the Indians that settled this continent are descended from those who came over the Bering Strait land bridge. Now, number one, there's absolutely no hard, fast evidence that the land bridge ever existed. And number two, there's no evidence that enough people may have used it to enable them to settle Canada, the United States, what's now the United States, Central America, and South America. We do know that there were Chinese explorers who actually came before, well, back in what we call B.C., before the Christian era. There's also, the Mayas, who were very early settlers who all vanished. I mean, there's records of cities that date back impossibly far. For example, in the mid-1700s, a Portuguese expedition went into the Brazilian rainforest. They had heard tales of cities, and they decided to track them down. Now, they came out on a high plateau, and in the distance was a valley. And in the valley was a city. Now they arrived to make camp in early evening, because you don't want to wander through the jungle after dark if you can help it. Because something can be 5 feet from you and you'll never see it. I know. They saw a lighted city in the valley. Now, this was a good-sized expedition. Rarely were any of these early expeditions less than a couple of hundred. Individuals. They might have bearers to carry their stuff, but they usually had a good supply of conquistadors. Well, the next morning, they descended into the valley and took up watch outside the city. It was a huge wall that surrounded it, and there were massive gates. And the gate that they decided was the main gate was slightly open. Now, there were new people. They knew people were there because they'd seen lights in the city the night before. Now, remember, this is the mid-1700s. But they didn't smell any smoke. And in their experience, lights meant fires or torches. Well, as they circled the city, they noticed that in one place the wall had collapsed, possibly because of an earthquake. So they waited till dusk, waiting for someone to enter or leave the city. And as they watched, the city was lit up. Still no smell of smoke, still no fire, still no torches. Well, finally the next morning, they moved up, listened outside the gates, didn't hear anything. And finally, pushed the gate open and entered the city. Well, there was a lot of damage to the buildings, but there were large buildings built of very large blocks. One building that they decided had to be a treasury had a collapsed wall, and there were gold coins all over the ground. Well, they spent all day exploring the city. Didn't find a soul. And as it got close to dusk, they were getting ready to build their evening fires, cook them something to eat. These globes that were on poles all over the city suddenly lit up, making it bright as day. Well, they decided to return and get the viceroy to give them a larger party so that they could really exploit what they found in the city. They wrote a record of what they had found thus far and sent two runners ahead of the group. Only one arrived back. The starting point of the expedition. The other runner and the entire expedition never came out of the jungle. That was the city that Colonel Fawcett was trying to search for when he disappeared with his expedition in the early 1900s. He called it the City of Z. He always believed there had been a much more advanced civilization that existed in the jungles. And having been in the jungle for several years, I can assure you that it is certainly possible for entire cities to be lost in the jungle and never seen again. Quite often when we were wandering through the jungles of South America, we would come up on buildings so overgrown you couldn't tell they were buildings. Now, Fawcett disappeared into the Mato Grosso, which is a high plateau in Brazil. Brazilian cadets who have to spend some time in the jungle as part of their training have often come upon the tribes of Caucasian Indians who are definitely not friendly. Now, if anyone wants to call in and disagree with me or tell a story of their own, pick up that phone. Locally is 915-219-4210, and I'm assured that the phones are working properly tonight. Toll free from any place in the continental United States, 866-229-2155 or 347-857-2680. Any of those numbers will get you on the Ken Hudnall Show, and you'll definitely have a good time. Now, we are finishing up our second hour. First hour, I had Robbie Thomas, author of Paranormal Encounters. Let's see. Kelly Roy says, when I went in the jungle in Lamani, Belize to see the Mayan ruins, I was amazed that many were still unexplored. Well, that's true. In fact, there are unexplored ruins all over Central and South America. I'm sure you're familiar with the crystal skull that came from a temple in Honduras, I think it is. Under tree roots and underground and such, that's quite correct. And it's not just ancient buildings. Along the coast of Panama were gun emplacements from World War I. And you know, structures that you only realized were man-made when you got right up to them. Even from the air, you couldn't tell what they were. And there were, some of them looked like people had walked out the day before. And a lot of people spent a lot of time looking for these places, and the things that they found were absolutely mind-boggling. I saw ran into an individual in the jungle who was finding Spanish bottles from the days of the colony that looked like they had been thrown down an hour before, because within a short time of them being disposed of, they were covered up by the jungle. In the jungle, a small group of people, if they want to, could raise hell with a much larger force. Literally, you are confined to what amounts to game trails, trails made by the animals that live in the jungle. And 5 feet off that trail, you'll be so lost you won't know which way to go. And what appear to be small streams can turn into raging rivers without any warning. Fort San Lorenzo was a major Spanish defense fortification on the Caribbean side of the Isthmus of Panama. It was captured by Henry Morgan when he went to raid Panama City, which was considered impregnable. He threw the cannons off the fort, and I sat on one of the cannons down at the base of the cliff. You still see the Spanish royal symbol. There are caves at the base of the cliff. The soldiers used to go down to the beach Because it gets hotter than Blue Blazes in Panama. During the summertime, it'll rain 2 o'clock every afternoon. It'll soak everybody to the skin. By 4:30, you're dry and hoping it rains again. The the water right there at the base of Fort San Lorenzo, which has a number of treasure-laden ships, there are more sharks per square foot in that area than any other place in the world. And a lot of the people like shark meat, and it can definitely supplement a GI's income if you catch a few sharks and haul them in and sell them to the restaurants in the city. There was an individual that I came across who was, he had a deuce and a, military deuce and a half, and on the front of most of the deuce and a halves, they had winches. And he would take big hunks of meat and put on the hook, play out the cable, throw it out into the area at the entrance to the river. And when a shark would grab it, he'd winch him in, kill him either by shooting him in the head or hitting him with a hammer. Sometimes even shooting him didn't faze him. Get him in the back of the truck and take him to town. Well, on the day that we came by, he was screaming for help because he had hooked something that was actually pulling the deuce and a half into the river. Now, a deuce and a half is a big truck, 2.5-ton truck. We had to drive our, I was in an APC. I'm a personnel carrier. We had to drive off the road down to the beach where he was at, hook the APC to the deuce and a half to keep it from being pulled into the river, and even my track vehicle couldn't pull whatever he had hooked out of the river. So that gives you an idea of some of the things that can be found down there. And when they built the Panama Canal, they had a work train that ran back and forth and carried people and equipment. And when they opened up the gates to allow the canal to be flooded, that train was left. It's on the bottom of the Gatun Lake. And a lot of people have been down to look at it. There are, if you can deal with the shark issue, you can make a damn good living bringing stuff up off Gatun Lake. I would love to explore more ancient civilizations, travel the world, and do spiritual Sounds like a good show. Take me with you. I'll be an investigator with you, and the added bonus, you get a medium, too. Well, definitely we can talk. A lot of the mysteries we're going to explore on the upcoming show will be in the Southwest, because there's places I've come across that have never seen a light of day. I've never seen anything done in film about Columbus, New Mexico, other than talking about Villa's attack. And yet, there are places that there are more mysteries than you can shake a stick at. I've seen photographs taken of what appeared to me to be a thunderbird or a pterodactyl that was shot by hunters in the mid to late 1800s. There are still places in the Southwest that people have rarely been. Also, let's not forget, the Zone of Silence is not too far from here. which is a place where the laws of that we're familiar with do not control. It's about 60 miles from El Paso, I'm told. Several times when they've launched rockets from White Sands, they've gone out of control and landed in the zone of silence. You go across a certain imaginary line on the ground, all radio communication ceases. There's strange vegetation. There are strange creatures that no one has ever seen before. And there are strange people seen inside the zone of silence. The Mexican government has built a research facility right in the center of it. And some of the things they found sounds like they're writing science fiction, but they're calling it like they see it. And whenever there are meteor showers and meteors come in to anywhere in the area of the zone of silence, it'll even change course to impact inside the zone of silence. Then there is the mysterious valley up in northern New Mexico, on the New Mexico-Colorado border. There are ancient missions, I think there's two, inside that valley that were old and crumbling when the Native Americans first moved into the area. And if you plot out where each of the tribes settled in Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, you've got a very distinctive gap around the mysterious valley. They might visit, but they would not live there under any circumstances. So it certainly is an area of mystery. Well, underneath El Paso, Texas, 900 miles of tunnels. There are legends that say that the Aztec underworld that they wrote so much about is a real place located underneath New Mexico, and you get to it by going through caves up in the Franklin Mountains, which is above El Paso. Now, a lot of Aztec treasure disappeared when the Spanish murdered Montezuma. He had agreed to pay ransom to be released. He was going to fill a room as high as he could reach. And his followers were stripping temples and public buildings all over the Aztec Empire. And there were a number of large caravans of gold and silver and jewels on the way to Tenochtitlan, which was the capital. And when word spread that he had been murdered, those caravans vanished. There are many legends that say that they came north and hid the treasure in the southwest United States. Certainly it's possible. And when you talk about treasure, of course, Maximilian's treasure has never been found, though I did see a photograph of Ova Noss, Doc Noss's wife, wearing Carlotta's crown, which would have been part of Maximilian's treasure. But there are many legends about that. And there are stories of people going up into the hills above Las Cruces, New Mexico, and finding enough wealth that they never had to work again. There are a lot of professional treasure hunters I know who do very nicely. In fact, I knew someone who, when I was in Panama, and the Army was their hobby. Their profession was treasure hunting, and they were very good at it. And the reason they liked the army is it took them places where they could hunt for treasure. And if you needed equipment, usually you could borrow it. So, I think you will find that some of the things we're going to talk about on the show will be stories you've never heard before. And I think you'll enjoy them. Now, I do want to make mention of the fact that this third hour is sponsored by Golden Corral, 7420 North Mason. And at 4 o'clock every afternoon and Sundays after 11, because they have breakfast on Sunday from 7:30 to 11, and on Saturday from 7:30 to 11. But Sundays after 11, they have Oceans of Shrimp. Shrimp scampi, popcorn shrimp, stuffed tortellini, crispy panko shrimp, linguine with lemon herb butter sauce, buffalo shrimp, baked fish topped with shrimp and lemon herb butter sauce, Seven Seas shrimp salad, delicious golden shrimp, and coconut shrimp. That's Golden Corral, 7420 North Mesa, right here in El Paso. And if you're telling me you heard about it on Well, I was thrown off the air. It's terrible when that happens. Clearly, there's a Sabatuji running around here. As I was saying, Kelly Roy said, I can't wait to find the Golden Power Stone located in the Peruvian desert. I was amazed to find out there was a desert in Peru, but Spirit told me about it. Education from Spirit. Who would have thunk it? Well, let me say this about that. There are certainly deserts in many places in the world that you wouldn't think they're deserts. Now, what you're calling the Golden Power Stone is probably one of the many stones referred to as navel stones. They were the heart of the various races that had custody of them. The Aztecs had one. The Incas had one. The Egyptians had one. Theirs was stolen by a man by the name of Moses. And that's the power item that's in the Ark of the Covenant, many people believe. Now, these stones were stones of great power. The one in the Ark of the Covenant could generate massive storms and could lay waste to entire cities. It once killed 50,000 people in Egypt because someone opened it and didn't know the secret. In fact, when the Ark was in the Solomon's Temple, it was only approached by the high priest once a year. And when he went in to the holiest of holies, he would be wearing a strap around his ankle and a rope attached to the strap, and that would be held by a group of men outside the holiest of holies. Sometimes the high priest could work with whatever was in the ark, and sometimes it was just kill him on the spot, and sometimes it would merely knock him out. But when something happened, they would use the rope to pull his body out of the holiest of holies. Now, when Solomon's temple was destroyed, the fate of the ark was never determined. It was never seen after that. Now, there are many stories that say that it was on a kind of a dumbwaiter, and it descended to a small room underneath the Temple Mount, where I'm trying to think of the name of the mosque that sits on the Temple Mount. Anyway, it's one of the most holy Islamic sites in the world. And the when Israel was reformed as a country, they wanted to rebuild the temple. Of course, with the Islamic religious center there, they can't. There was explorations done underneath the Temple Mount, both by the Templars and by the British prior to World War I. And there's evidence that the Templars found something. Now, legend says that they found the Ark and they took it to France, which was the Templar home country, so to speak. And they built a cathedral around the Ark. Now, the reason they did that was they were trying to hide it from the Catholic Church. When the Templars were in the Middle East, they became indoctrinated in the traditions of the Middle East, and they discovered something that called into question some of their most basic beliefs regarding Christianity. That is supposedly the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the south end of the Temple Mount, rebuilt in 1035. That was, as long as that building sits there, they cannot rebuild the temple. Maybe I shouldn't tell the world then. I swear I was born with true serum, but finders keepers will be my little secret. You'll tell me. I appreciate that. Certainly quite amazing, Heidi. Even during the time, the First Crusade is the only crusade that was successful militarily. And they conquered the Holy Land and created several kingdoms. The Kingdom of Jerusalem was probably the most predominant kingdom. There's still a hereditary title, King of Jerusalem. And there is a living individual who holds the title, King of Jerusalem. There were three other Christian kingdoms in the Holy Land. And the Templars were sent to the Holy Land to find something. That much was clear. And there were special envoys, otherwise they never would have gotten access to the king. They professed to be nine poor knights who came to the Holy Land to protect pilgrims on the road. But they didn't even have enough horses for each one to have his own horse. And nine knights against the power of the Saracen army. Please. They didn't even take in new members for over a decade. But they found something that gave them unbelievable power in the Christian world. They became the most powerful order. They had a fleet bigger than that of most countries. They had their own standing military, and they answered only to the Pope. Now, they could commit murder in broad daylight in the middle of the city, and no power could arrest them. They could only be arrested by their own people. Now, documents came to light back in the 1990s. In the Vatican secret archives, it said that in spite of what history said, the Pope did not condemn the Templars. It was all done by Philip the Fair, King of France. And Philip, of course, was a kingmaker in his own right. When he decided to move against the Templars, the Pope at that time refused to support him. So he killed him and replaced him with his own man, Clement V, who still didn't want to turn against the Templars. So he held a secret conclave and put them on trial and determined that the charges against them were false. But that didn't stop Philip. Now, a lot of the Templar treasure goes far beyond gold and silver, though there was a lot of that too. Philip gave orders for every Templar within France to be arrested on a certain day. Friday the 13th, 1309, I think it was. They were all to be arrested on the same day at the same time. And though they did capture several hundred, the entire Templar treasure, the fleet, and those who were related to certain very prominent families were all missing. Now, when James of England was fighting against the Scots, the King of England had a massive army against a few thousand Scottish clansmen. And as the English army got ready to close in for the kill, a troop of Templars entered the battlefield, the Battle of Bannockburn. That was the last time the Templar flag flew over a battlefield. And that one troop of Templars, because remember, they were knights mounted on horseback, literally scattered the English army. And as a result, Scotland had its freedom. Until a future King of Scotland also became the King of England and combined the two countries. Now, the Templar treasure originally, many believe, to Roslyn Chapel in Scotland. Ground-penetrating radar showed that there was a hollow area beneath the chapel. But the current head of the Sinclair family, who controls Roslyn Chapel, refused to allow digging to be done. There are many stories that say that the Holy Grail is in this country. Problem is finding it. The Holy Grail, assuming that it is not in Ethiopia, as many believe, would be an unbelievable treasure for anybody. Now, the story of how it got to Ethiopia has some historical basis to it. Solomon, of course, had installed it in the Holiest of Holies in the temple. And if you remember your Bible, the Queen of Sheba, who has never been really identified, came to visit Solomon because she'd heard about his wisdom. And Solomon invited her to share his quarters. And she agreed on the condition that he not force himself on her. And he agreed, provided she took nothing. Now, Solomon was an individual of, shall we say, appetites. But he kept his word. Now, through a lot of research, it appears that the Queen of Sheba was actually the first female pharaoh of Egypt. Because Sheba, which has been identified as Yemen by many researchers, was actually part of the Egyptian Empire at that point in time. And there's a lot of mystery about the first female pharaoh, not the least of which is what happened to her, because she literally vanished from history. Now, the Queen of Sheba stayed with Solomon for a good 6 or 8 months. And one evening, right before she left, they had a feast where she was showered with every delicacy known to the Egyptian people, one of which was a very salty type of date. And he had placed beside her sleeping area a large pitcher of water. And during the night, remember, she was sleeping in his quarters. So was he. During the night, she found it necessary to drink some of that water, which he took to mean that she took something from his quarters. And thus, that freed him of his promise not to force himself on her. And the inevitable happened. She became pregnant. But before time to deliver, she left for her own country. Though she did promise Solomon she would send his son, because she was certain it would be a son. When he became 18, she would send his son back to meet him. Well, it came to pass that she did give birth to a son. And when he was 18, he returned to visit his father, who was overjoyed at meeting his son. He was so overjoyed, that he told his son that, in honor of his visit, anything he wanted of his empire, he would give to his son. And the son said, "The only thing I want is the ark." Of course, he wouldn't give that. Well, being a prince, he had come with a retinue of retainers. And one night, they raided the temple, took the ark, and took out home. The Hebrews gave chase, but weren't able to catch him. And after that, of course, Solomon said, "Well, we really don't need the ark anymore." Which may have been a face-saving statement. But Menelik, the son, actually began an empire that was built around a form of Judaism. In fact, they are quite often referred to as the Black Jews. The ark that they say they have is brought out once a year, just as in Jewish tradition, and paraded around the city for Addis Ababa, for people to approach. No one's allowed to see it. It's always kept covered, but it's carried. Now, the ark itself was actually what's known as a bark in Egypt. The box was made in Egypt to the same dimensions as the sarcophagus in the king's chamber in the Great Pyramid. Now, there are stories of the Egyptians using something in the Great Pyramid to generate an unbelievable amount of power, which was distributed throughout the country. Now, how much is legend and how much is truth? Anybody's guess. But the point is, whatever it was, had a tremendous amount of power. Now, the story goes that, you know, the power of the Pharaoh ebbed and flowed. And Egypt was conquered several times. And at one point they were invaded by a group known as the Sea People. Now the Pharaoh set out to fight them, leaving in control of his empire the Grand Vizier. And there are those that say that Grand Vizier was an Egyptian prince who, under his Hebrew name, became known as Moses. Now, everybody was, smart money said the Pharaoh was going to get wasted. There was no way the Egyptian army was big enough to defeat the Sea Peoples, because at the same time the Sea People were invading, there was an invading army coming from the east as well. They were going to get caught between the two and destroyed. So he felt fairly confident staging a coup and taking over. Now the interesting thing is the Pharaoh was a better tactician than everybody thought, because he actually defeated both armies and returned to deal with his traitorous Grand Vizier, who, with all of his followers, decided it was time to head out to better lands, I guess you could say. Now, they grabbed everything that wasn't tied down. I mean, it was definitely open season on anything of value. And one of the things they took was whatever sat in the sarcophagus in the king's chamber. And it was put in the bark. Now, the Egyptian prince that was the grand vizier had been temple trained, so he knew a lot of the secrets. And he knew that this was something of great power. Now, having just fought two major battles, the Egyptian army had to be tired, no question about it. So why did they, and they also had a shortage of food in the empire. And all these people leaving pretty much was okay with everybody. So why did the Egyptian army chase those who were leaving? Now, this is what we today refer to as the Exodus. What caused them to chase after people they didn't want in the first place? Well, the best theory I've come up with is because the people that were leaving took something that the Egyptians wanted very badly. And that would be whatever item of power sat inside the Great Pyramid. But unfortunately for the Egyptians, they never were able to catch them. Now, keep in mind that this item of power had quite a number of legends about it. Any army that had it carried before them, according to legend, could not be defeated. And yet, it did happen. In fact, the Egyptians lost, the Hebrews lost a major engagement that resulted in them losing the ark. The Egyptians captured it. It was taken to another city, and this was long after the Exodus period. It was taken to a major enemy city, put in their temple, sat at the feet of their gods, and 3 nights in a row, they came in to find their gods laying on the ground. So one of the priests decided to open the ark and see what was in it. 50,000 people are said to have died as a result of that box being opened. The destruction was so bad that they sent word to the Hebrews, we're bringing it back. We'll leave it at the border. We don't want it. So the Hebrews sent a force to get it. Now, there's one clan within the Jewish culture which was charged with taking care of the ark. And frankly, I do not remember the name of that particular clan. But there were a number of them there when they got control of it. The old shaman told me I would soon use a gold stone to heal others, but I was more ready for the power at that moment. Well, stuff. Maybe he meant a gold card, and you're going to get an American Express gold card. That can heal people. Just an idea. So while they were bringing it back, it was on a cart. The ground was uneven, and one of the wheels fell in a rut, and the cart began to tip. One of those escorting it reached to keep the ark from falling to the ground and was struck dead. There was clearly a secret to controlling this thing of power. And if you didn't know the secret, you would die. 50,000 people didn't know the secret in that city and they died. Now, we've got about 16 minutes left in tonight's show. If you would like to call in, local number is 915-219-4210. Toll free from any place in the continental United States, 866-229-2155. Or toll free from any place in the continental United States, 866-229-2155 or 347-857-2680. Any of those numbers will get you on the show. Or you can take part in the discussion through the chat room. We've had an interesting evening starting out with Robbie Thomas, author of Paranormal Events. And he wants to be involved in what I'm getting ready to do. And let's face it, folks, if it's even half as successful as everyone has told me it's going to be, it's going to be out of this world. And as he said, we're going to put this show on the road. We're going to put it on the map. We hope. And it's the secrets and the mysteries. Kelly Roy, when I get a landline, I'll call in. I appreciate that. Definitely be nice to talk to you. When we put the show on the road, without a doubt, we are going to go to some of the strangest places we can find. You never know when you're going to stumble upon a mystery. And you never know when you'll be able to solve a mystery. Mysteries are what allow us to really get the old adrenaline going, or as I used to say, get the old heart pumping. It's always good to be able to say, I know what caused that over there. Let me tell you about it. Now, you know, it's going to be half camera will travel. And we're going to go places that will absolutely boggle the mind. And if you, I invite you to go with us, because as I say, it's half camera will travel. And we're going to be going, if it's got indoor plumbing, we're going to be there. I don't care where it is. If it ain't got indoor plumbing, send me a postcard. Might even get me an RV and go traipsing out across the country. Because when you traipse, you never know what's going to happen. And I've traipsed to a lot of places. Even places that didn't have indoor plumbing. I regretted it. Hard to take a shower when there's no water. But the first trip to Machu Picchu, we'll stop at the Peruvian desert on the way. Never know what you're going to find, that's right. But let me say this about that without fear of contradiction. Mysteries will get your blood pumping. And then, of course, you never know when that first buried treasure will pop up and make you wealthier than Midas. And you can afford to take your indoor plumbing with you. Some things are important. Let's see. We have about 10 minutes left on the air. And then it'll be time to play my theme music. And I'll wander off into the sunset. But keep in mind that Halloween, or the Saturday before, at 8 p.m. at the Camino Real Hotel. Now, if y'all want to come into town to be part of the ghost tour, I can get you a discount at the hotel. Yes, sir, I can. Now, tomorrow, Dr. Robert Huizinger, the man that created the Biggest Loser TV show, will be on my show. In fact, Sharon will be doing the interview. Halloween is a Sunday. That is correct. That's why my ghost tour is going to be on Saturday night at 8 p.m. It's a free ghost tour. Of course, I'll have copious amounts of my books there for everybody to happily buy, 6 or 8 apiece. And I may have one other guest tomorrow. I don't know for sure in the morning. And if you have a business and you'd like the world to know about it, buy some time on my show. You know, this is a, we're heard around the world. I got a lot of Canadian listeners, Australian, Mexican, Philippines, Sweden, and we get people downloading the show like you wouldn't believe. I've had this show going about 14 to 15 months, and I've got 26,000 downloads. So a lot of people are downloading the show. It is popular, as they say in some places. Okay, we've got about 5 minutes left. We are going to announce in the next few days exactly what it is we are doing that is going to be so unique. And I think y'all will like it. It's definitely going to be a lot of fun. And that's the main thing, folks. If it quits being fun, it's time to go do something else. Now, I hear a phone ringing. Is that somebody calling in, or what is it we're doing here? Nobody ever tells me anything. I never know what's going on. now? But seriously, we've had folks come in from California on the train just to go to the ghost tours. And that was before I made my arrangement with the hotel. And you can get a hell of a discount if you book through the ghost tour. Just something else to try to make folks enjoy what's going on. And we will also, as I say, we'll have a new book out next month. I'll be talking about some of the strange things I came across in Nevada. And you never know when you're going to find a mystery, and I usually have a camera close by. And I've got a, came back from Nevada with my HD video camera. So he's ready. All right. I see. Well, tonight we have an interesting show. Robbie Thomas was right on with his reading of my next 60 days. He's done a lot of work with law enforcement, and he is very highly thought of. In a lot of areas, he's done a lot of different shows. Done a couple of movies. So, I would suggest that he wants to work with my new show. I say new, it's going to be a different way of doing the show. That I think y'all will enjoy. It'll be a lot more interactive, so to speak. And y'all will know very shortly when it's going to be launched and exactly how it's going to be launched and because I want as many people involved as possible. I want you to enjoy it. Okay, we've got about 3 minutes left in tonight's show. Any questions through the chat room? I'll be more than happy to answer them. We're also checking out the new site that's going to be launched with our new venture. I've had problems getting fulfillment companies to get books out in a timely fashion. So we've made a deal with Amazon. And they will be actually doing the fulfillment for me. I think that will be, that'll solve a lot of the problems. And one thing about Amazon, they do ship. And they do ship rapidly. And there will be, we'll be offering specials on my books. And we'll have the t-shirts and we'll have the ghost hunting kits and mugs and all kinds of stuff. So that's something for y'all to keep in mind. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to be all over the place. And who knows, we might come to a town near you. Well, it looks like we have, looks like we've run out of time. So until tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying, have a truly great evening.
Bye.